the Almost Perfect Podcast.
Welcome to the Almost Perfect Podcast, a celebration of fuck-ups, failures, and falling flat on your face. This is a podcast that believes you can learn from experience, but that experience doesn't have to be your own. Ha, I'm Bob Perfect, and I'm a functional fuck-up. Let's learn from somebody else's mistakes. And today we're learning from Jacques Henning. Now, Jacques is the owner of a game store up in Pretoria. It's called HQ Gaming, and it's one of my favorite places to go and play Magic the Gathering. And so this is a podcast that's largely about Magic the Gathering, but more from the business side of things and the financial aspect of the whole game, whilst also looking at, you know, what it's like to be a player in South Africa, and also what it's like to invest in your dream, you know, invest in your hobby, invest in the things that matter to you. Because, you know, Jacques took a big risk, I think, by opening his store. He did it less than a year ago. Before that, he was selling Magic cards on the internet through a website, and before that was individually. He's been in the game for a very long time, and is someone who, you know, is well-known and well-liked mostly in the community. So I thought he would be a great person to chat to, because I also just like his philosophies in general when it comes to this thing. And I've also, like I said, had great experiences with his store. I really enjoy, like, literally, I was in Joburg about 2 weeks ago now. And I was in Joburg to visit my mom for her birthday. But I also decided, hey, I've got this day on Sunday. Let me catch the Gau train to Pretoria, then catch an Uber, you know, to the store and play Magic all day. And that was, like, you, that's a mission, and that's an expensive mission in a way. Although catching the Gau train to Pretoria is definitely the cheapest way you can get there, I think. But yeah, like, I'm always willing to kind of make that mission when I'm in Joburg and I've got the time, so I can go play at the store, just because I enjoy, you know, like, the way that we trade, myself and Jacques. He's always been very fair. He's always given me a good price on cards. He's willing to negotiate, and, you know, like, that's stuff I appreciate in a business owner, man. And he also does a lot to promote the game and to bring people into his store and to reward players. I've won quite a few boosters. Boosters are packs of Magic cards, basically. They're what you sell over the counter, what a lot of people buy over the counter. Although we also get into the other side of things where you're selling individual cards in this podcast. So I don't know how much it's going to appeal to the regular listener of this podcast, but there is a lot of interesting stuff. There's a lot of things that maybe I'm a little worried. I did try and edit out as much of the, you know, esoteric stuff as possible, the stuff that you have to, like, be in the game to know about. And I tried to make it mostly about the business side of things and just, you know, the following your passion side of things, because Jacques used to be an IT and eventually left that so he could do this. And he's got big, big plans, and some of them are really coming together. Like, there's going to be Magic at Comic-Con Africa. And I guess I can announce that I am going to be the MC for the Magic the Gathering at Comic-Con Africa. It's called the Open Series, and there's like 4 different tournaments happening over the course of the weekend with a 3 grand first prize at least. I think there's more prizes being added. But yeah, you can win a 3 grand each day if you enter into each one of the tournaments. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be playing. I'm going to be emceeing. I'm going to be having a great time. I'm going to be, yeah, like, in awe of all the cosplayers. I'm thinking about cosplaying. I'm trying to think about cosplaying. It's a bit difficult since I'm a kind of person who only flies with one bag at the moment. You know, like, I like to just have my bag on my back, get on the plane, you know, that's it. So cosplaying might be a little bit difficult, but maybe I can chat to some people in Joburg and see what we can come up with. But in general, I'm really looking forward to all the cosplayers. I'm looking forward to getting some cards signed. There's going to be some artists there. I'm also probably going to get some comic books signed. I need to actually see who's there and what comics I've got of theirs. And hopefully I can, yeah, get some stuff signed and just live out, you know, that nerdy con life. That never really been to a big con other than, you know, we've had Icon here in Durban, but whilst that's growing and a really rad con that you should definitely check out next year, I'm a huge fan of it. Yeah, Comic-Con is kind of the granddaddy in a lot of ways, I think. It's, you know, everyone knows it, and it's super commercial. And, you know, there's going to be things about that that I fucking hate, and there's also just going to be things about it that I really, really enjoy. I'm looking forward to meeting up with a lot of, you know, the Magic players around the country. I think some people are going to come up from other places as well. And also just seeing nerds from around the country coming through. Like, I don't doubt that, you know, there are listeners to this that are going to be at Comic-Con Africa. So hit me up if you are. I'd love to meet some of you if I haven't met you before. And if I have, well, you know, let's hang the fuck out. Yeah, other than that, fuck. yeah, this week has not been a great week in South Africa. And, I mean, that's like every week, I guess. If for a long time, it's just things are at a boiling point now, and we're dealing with a lot of tragic fucking shit at the moment, and it's really, really, really hard, I think, for a lot of people at the moment. Obviously, you know, like, you know, I've said a lot over the years, and, you know, tried to change my actions where I can, and I'm still working on a lot of my own things, and that's essentially what I think. Like, a lot of men are asking, you know, what can we do about this? And to me, I just think, you know, we should look into ourselves. Obviously, call out your mates, call out your friends, and blah blah blah, but call out yourself, man. I think that's probably, like, one of the biggest ways we can actually have change, because, you know, I know I've been a piece of shit, I know that. I mean, there's definitely women in my past who probably still hate me for things I did, you know, and I know I'm not the only man who feels that way, and it's just, you know, I think a lot of people on the men are trash side and the not all men side are kind of feeling a lot of guilt, and they're expressing things because of that guilt. Both, you know, the people who are going, men are trash, are going, yeah, I've been trash and I'm guilty of this. And, you know, I want to not feel bad about that anymore, I guess. Maybe get, like, also, you know, stand up for it because you realize, hey, it's wrong. And then on the other side, you know, I think people don't really want to recognize that what they've done is wrong, you know, like they don't want to look at their own actions and go, shit, I actually have been trash. Like, I am like these guys, you know, because I think, you know, people don't want to call themselves a rapist, like, even though, you know, they've sexually assaulted women. Like, I'm talking like about myself there. Like, so it's, you don't want to associate yourself with that, I think. So that's why guys, you know, want to go, not all men, because they don't see how, you know, rape jokes, and they don't see how a lot of their other actions have contributed to this, or they kind of do see it and they just don't want to admit it to themselves. I don't know. I'm just thinking aloud about this. I don't really have anything planned. I was just, yeah. Like, this stuff is, like, I don't know, it just, even this doesn't feel right. Like, I feel like I'm full of shit when it comes to this, you know. I feel like I'm guilty of so much, and, you know, I have tried, like, so much to work on my own behaviors, actions, views on the world, and, you know, will continue to do so, but I'm still guilty of so much, you know, that contributes to men being trash. And that's why, like, I can't, you know, like, not be like, yeah, of course men are trash, but then I also wonder how much of it is, you know, virtue signaling, how much of it is me just going, like, you know, I want to absolve myself of the things I've done. So yeah, here we are, you know. I just once again feel like maybe we should all look at ourselves, and by we all, I mean men. Just look into your heart, look into your past, look into who you really fucking are. And, you know, if you don't like who that is, try and change it. There's lots of stuff out there to help you. And Like, it's been cool at least to see more men talking about talking to other men about this and that. So that is rad, and I hope it does actually happen, and it does actually, you know, I'm hoping the culture changes, man. Because, yeah, we've all been complicit. And by we all, I mean men. And obviously there are some women who defend the patriarchy and, you know, get involved in that way. But I don't know how much of it is my place to criticize. So we all, and by that I mean men, just really do need to examine our own fucking actions and change them. Yeah, so with that in mind, yeah, we'll go, I don't know, I just felt like I had to say something there, and now it feels a bit contrived, but I think I'll leave it in anyway, because maybe it'll help, maybe it'll have an effect. Maybe one of you guys will, you know, change your ways or something, but I don't know how much even me saying that can even help. And yeah. Okay, so with that out of the way, I guess we will be getting into this podcast with Jacques. Very, very unrelated conversations. But I just, like, I had to say something. So yeah, this conversation we're going to get into, the sound quality isn't great. It's not the best, but it's because we were in a bar. We went to Capital Craft after playing Magic, because stuff was actually happening at the store. They were filming other stuff for Comic-Con, actually, I think, or for content for their YouTube channel. So Jacques and I went along with another friend to Capital Craft. We had some beers. So you'll hear some talking in the background. It's not the cleanest audio, but I know you guys know now that my philosophy with this is rather try and just get the podcast, try and get the interview, than to get it 100% perfect. It is called the Almost Perfect Podcast for a reason. And so with all of that, it's now time for the Almost Perfect Podcast with Jacques Henning. Here it comes. How are you living, Jacques?
Hey, lucky you, bud.
Not too shabby. Just played a little bit of Magic the Gathering at your store.
Oh, which, yeah, man.
So you own a store called HQ Gaming.
Yeah.
And how long has the store been open for?
I opened it in December last year, 2018.
It's only been going, not even a year yet.
No, not a year yet.
So what made you start a Magic the Gathering store? It's a game store, but you mostly focus on Magic,
yeah,
more so than anyone else.
Like, yeah, it's focused on Magic the Gathering singles. Moved to Pretoria about 3 years ago and left my job at an online singles platform, and it was doing really well. And got tired about, like, the play space we had in Pretoria, and decided to open my own shop.
So it was like a DIY, like, just, you know, you saw the gap and you were like, I want to create a space that I would go to.
Yeah, let's do it better.
Do it better. I like that. So this is my philosophy, man. That's why, like, everything I've done has been like that the same way. It's been this whole philosophy of seeing a thing and going, that's not quite the way I would do it.
Yeah, exactly.
And putting your... But fuck, it's a big risk though, because Magic is not a cheap game.
It's a very niche market.
Look, but it's also like, just your inventory costs so much.
Yeah, yeah. Like, So it's high risk, high reward, but also the love I have for the game and the community in South Africa in general. It's why I did it. And there's a big enough following in Pretoria that I thought, like, yeah, it's worth a risk. Let's do it.
So what's your philosophy when it comes to running a store? Because I've noticed it's very... you take losses, essentially, to make sure that your players are happy, like, a lot of the time. Is that not risky?
It is risky, but you want to make players feel happy and comfortable, and overall it's just a general rule, don't be an asshole or do us, and that's my philosophy going into it, and it's like the players appreciate it.
They do. Have you, like, were you expecting so many people to come on board at the store so, like, quickly? Because there are other stores in Pretoria, there are other stores in Joburg. It's not like there isn't competition for you, but within the last year, you know, you set up the store and almost immediately had people coming to you, and you've built, like, a really cool community really quickly.
Yeah, the advantage I had, it's like I've been playing the game for about 20 years now, and everybody knows me in a community for several years, always asking me for single cards, and generally people just come to me asking for cards, and I said, well, let's make this work as a business. And that's, so far it's going well.
So it was having the, like, so before you had a brick and mortar store, you had the online store.
Yeah.
So you found that helped you?
Like... Yeah, and even before the online store, I just did it as a hobby. I just traded and sold cards on the side to pay for my hobby, Magic the Gathering, and it worked out. Is spec buying and speculation on cards. And
yeah, I've explained that a little bit to people who listen to the podcast, because some people have asked me questions about it, and I mentioned like how I play Magic is kind of like that. Like, I'm very much in the financial side of it, and they're like, I just don't want it to cost me money.
Yeah, so Magic play is all about value. If you play the game, you play for value. If you trade, you do it for value. And you get, there's this whole secondary market that you can spec on. You can make speculations. It's like investing
in
stocks.
And it's very much like that.
Exactly. And the nice thing, it's a form of liquid capital. It's like you don't get taxed on it. Just keep quiet about it. But
well, you do for your store. Yeah, like for people who like do
yeah,
singles
it's
and stuff.
It's like if a guy
people like me don't.
Yeah, if you have a big enough Magic collection, you want to move overseas, and it's like, okay, cool, I can move overseas, yeah. And I drop my singles collection. Now all of a sudden I've got a year's worth of money to survive on overseas. It's liquid capital. It's fantastic.
But how do you feel about like cardboard being worth so much money? Does it ever fuck with you?
No, never.
Never. You never like what
define artwork being expensive. It's the same thing. It's for me. It's I won't invest money in art, but I'll invest money in cardboard.
But it's also because I guess you see the value in the cardboard because you understand it. Because also, what I guess like other people wouldn't understand when it comes to this is like when I say like how can you spend so much money on cardboard? It's like, well, that cardboard has direct value within the like game that we have. It's like it's the same thing as like with stocks. Like stocks go up the more people buy them.
Exactly.
Same thing with cards.
Supply and demand.
The more people that need them, the higher the value is. And so speculating is essentially going, this card isn't popular right now, but in 6 months' time, it's going to be.
So pick them up while they're 20 cents.
I mean,
in 6 months' time, they're worth $2. If you buy 1,000 of that, do the maths. It's going to be money.
But isn't it hard to move that amount of cards in South Africa?
It is, but also when you have connections overseas, you build a community, you build a brand. So I do a lot of trading and selling overseas. I've got a few customers in Ireland and in Dubai that are buying from me every month. And
wow. And I mean, what's the differences there between like delivering to them? Are they buying from you because you're cheaper than what they can get overseas?
No, because they've when they lived in South Africa years ago, they supported me, and now they know I always have a card, and it's like they don't mind paying the $300-$400 for shipping internationally, and they
because it doesn't cost them that
and
much
they still support me, and they make a lot more money over there than they did over here.
Fair enough. What got you into Magic? When did you get into it? You said about 20 years ago.
Yeah, I was 13 years old. I started Pokemon TCG.
I think a lot of us start that way.
Yeah, and it's like you got to high school, grade 8, and it's like all of a sudden you see the older kids, the grade 11th, grade 12, they're playing like Magic the Gathering, and it's like, why are we not playing that? You know, it's like, so yeah, I got luckily I got taught by one of the better Magic players in the country. Was fortunate.
Who taught you?
Christian Duplessis.
Oh, back in the day, he doesn't play anymore. Does
no,
he
doesn't play anymore. But he was.
I remember him.
Yeah, he consecutive national top 8 world championship competitor, and he was fantastic at the game. And he taught me. And I mean, after I played with him and his play group for about 6 months, I qualified for my first national. So, yeah.
Yeah, I still remember my Magic story is like. I won like the third. No, I didn't win. I came like third in like my third or fourth tournaments with a deck like the guys I'd met, you know, a few weeks before. They gave me a Draco deck, which was like a weird combo with like it just basically it's a big ass creature like that comes out of nowhere.
The guy and I beat the artifact from Planeshift.
And I beat a guy called Darren Mays who you
know. I know that guy.
And like in South Africa at the time, and he was the best player in Durban at the time. And he was so salty to just lose to this kid with this janky deck. And that's kind of been my philosophy forever, is just to try to beat people with decks that like they feel like they shouldn't lose to.
Yeah, so I grew up in Pietersburg, and it's a small town in Limpopo, and we used to play every Saturday in this old man's house in the garage. He set up a garage to host events. And,
oh wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, and that's how we started. And so we got a regionals, and it's like I've been playing for 6 months, and all of a sudden, all these folks from Joburg, beach up in Pietersburg, And it's like,
why? Because they hadn't qualified.
They were called the Suicide Penguins, by the way.
And oh, I like, know the Suicide Penguins.
So it's like the best players in the country.
Yeah.
So I missed qualifying for nationals my first year of playing with one spot. And it's like, because of the Suicide Penguins. So the next week after that, at University of Pretoria, there's another regionals. And I told my folks, like, listen, I'm buying a bus ticket and I'm going to Pretoria to try and qualify. And luckily, Block constructed blue-green Madness deck back in the Odyssey days.
Yes, one of my favorite decks of all time.
And I made top 12 of an 80-man event to qualify for nationals.
Yeah, that qualifies for
me. So I was pretty stoked with myself.
Yeah, man. I miss those days of Magic in South Africa. Because people listening now might know a little about Magic, but they probably don't. Mm. And we used to have a really cool competitive scene in that, like, it used to be built up. Like, you would, like, you know, have to, like, play in your regionals, and your regionals go to nationals.
Nationals. Road Warrior days.
Yeah, man. But even then, we used to have these things called Pro Tour qualifiers.
Yeah.
So there's this big tournament called the Pro Tour that still kind of happens. It's now named different things. But in South Africa, we used to actually have these qualifying tournaments. And so when you're talking about, like, catching a bus to Pretoria, we used to go from Durban to Joburg for a weekend to play fucking Magic. And it was worth it. It was so much fun.
It was fun.
Yeah. But nowadays, that doesn't exist
anymore. There's no value now. There's, like, no value in South Africa anymore. Also,
there isn't that, but you are kind of working on alternatives.
So, yeah, I was fortunate enough to get approached by Comic-Con, the organizers of Comic-Con Africa this year, and they told me, like, we've got space, we want Magic events, what can you do? And I brainstormed a bit, and we decided, okay, well, listen, let's do an Open Series Championship. Our competitive events was taken away by Wizards. We don't have opportunities to...
Wizards is Wizards of the Coast. Yeah. They're the owners of Magic Gathering. Yeah, Hasbro owned them. They designed
the game. They make the cards.
Yeah.
So they took it away from us. Take the initiative, do something else, put it in its place. So, yeah. So the plan for Comic-Con from 21 to 24 September is we're going to have three open series events for three different formats. And we're going to just have great prize support, make it worthwhile for guys to travel up to Joburg, just jam some Magic and have fun.
When you say great prize support, what do you mean? Like, let's give the people some context of what you can win when it comes to Magic the Gathering when it's a big tournament like this.
So at the moment, for each event, what we're doing is, like, first place is going to get like 3,000 rands worth of cash prizes.
Cash prizes, yeah, and more prizes. Yeah, and more.
So Comic-Con has sponsored us a double VIP package for next year's Comic-Con for first place, and you get to get a photo and autograph from one of the stars this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Captain Kirk, you can get a photo and signature from Captain Kirk this year. But yeah, we're trying to get more sponsorships, make it more worthwhile playing these events.
And what's your philosophy with regards to that? Like, because obviously that's a lot of money to be, like, handing out, and you might not necessarily get all of that in entry fees.
No, you'll always lose money. It's unfortunately the situation, especially in a niche market. You're going to lose money.
But how do you have a business when you're constantly losing money?
It's a form of advertising. You can write it off as advertising, but if you want to make it work, stick to your guns, make it happen.
But what is the philosophy? So what I mean here is, you're doing this with a, like, knowing that you might lose some money here.
Yeah, but we're going to grow it. So Comic-Con said next year, Cape Town, 31 May, Comic-Con Cape Town. We're going to run the events there as well. And we're going to run it twice a year, once in Cape Town, one in Joburg. And
do you think we can get back to the old days of Magic in South Africa?
Yes, we can, definitely.
Is that what you're trying to do here?
Yeah, definitely. The players are keen, there is money.
So the glory days of Magic, you think, are something that we actually can get back? Like,
so,
because the thing is that we have a big issue with, for what's happened in South Africa when it comes to this game, is the support from the main company, Wizards, has dropped kind of drastically.
Yeah, completely, basically.
What do you think their reasoning is there?
Okay, so the biggest problem is with South Africa is the product coming in from Europe costs a lot of money.
And that's also because we're getting it from Europe and not America.
So the supply orders from Europe, it's expensive with the VATs and duties we're paying. So they distribute to the shops, they have to put their markup on it, and the secondary market is basically controlled by supply and demand with the singles. So for South African players, it's always cheaper to order from overseas.
And also the thing is, the South African, so you guys are paying all these extra fees and stuff on sealed products, sealed products like boosters and stuff, and then people are still wanting single prices at American prices.
Yes.
Like, because that's what I've always thought about. So we can get into, like, I guess the markets of this. I don't know how interested in economics my podcast fans are, but they're going to get learn a little. Have you found that a bit difficult to deal with? That South African pricing is not based on supply and demand.
Yeah, that's what my shop is trying to change. I'm on par with American pricing.
But no, what I'm saying, though, is that's a bit of a problem, though, in a way. If we're going by dollar pricing.
Yeah.
But they've got such a different supply and demand to us. So we're busy selling stuff at their prices based on their supply and demand.
So when it comes to magic and you look at the, like, I always like to work on the McDonald's scale of economy and world.
Yeah, sure.
So if you go to Europe, you buy a Big Mac meal, it's going to cost you about 150 bucks. And you can get a Big Mac meal here for what, 49, 48 rand?
Yeah.
So that's all.
But you can't do the same thing when it comes to cards.
Yes, you can't. Because we pay about double for the sealed product than any other place in the world pays for it. And that's the biggest problem. Now, the stores are losing money opening stock to sell singles. That's the biggest problem. So everybody's supporting overseas stores by ordering singles from them. They get huge discounts from their suppliers because they order 120
cases.
cases at once. And South African stores can't do that.
I mean, just a regular brick and mortar store in America can order more than every store in South Africa put together.
Exactly.
Basically.
Okay.
And they can sell it and they can push it.
Yeah.
So this once again brings the question to why. Like, do you really, like, especially given the economics of the country at the moment, like in South Africa at the moment and the world globally, I mean, you're looking like at America, they're probably going to hit a recession. Like, everyone's talking about the
South Africa as well.
South Africa is in a recession, technically, has been for a while. And, you know, if America gets in a recession now, we're going to be even more fucked. So what, like, how do you think about these things? Are you worried about these things? What's your like?
If you worry about those things, it's like, just don't do anything at all. You can't worry about those things. You can only carry on with your daily thing, try to make ends meet and carry on. It's like, it's difficult trying to make money in this hobby and then still, you know, making the community happy. It's very tough.
Yeah, because as a community member, I know that I'm not the most demanding, but, like, I know the stores in Durban don't necessarily, not that they don't like me, but they know that I want more than they give me.
What,
essentially.
The stores in Durban? No, I'm joking.
But as a competitive player, because I am a competitive player.
Yeah.
Well, I want to be.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm a competitive player when I play online. I don't think I'm a competitive player when I play in Durban, because if I'm going to win one booster, it's just not really
worthwhile
me doing that. But, like, I like that you're at least trying to make that a bit different, like, for people, to make it a bit more valuable for players. But, fuck, it must be such a weird seesaw of, like, because you're also a player, so you also understand that, like, the wanting value as a player. And so you're going to support places that give you the best value.
Yeah.
But, as a store, how do you balance, like, how do you balance that fine fucking line of not losing out and not taking too high a profit margin, but at the same time, like,
you can't balance it. It's really tough. But you know what? It's for the love of the game. You want to make the most of it. You want to grow the community, and after a while, you'll start seeing the rewards. People will start buying more. But you can't balance it. It's impossible. It's really impossible. Most is like all the hobby stores in South Africa, you'll see they're so diversified with their.
They have a million different games.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You can't focus on one thing.
I mean, you've got other games in your store, but.
But they don't sell. They don't make any money.
Not at all.
No.
The board games don't make you money.
No. No, they. It's like they're standing. It's like board games are popular, but it's the Magic singles is bringing in my most money for me.
It's weird because in Durban, I think like Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic, yeah, those are probably the two biggest. Like,
yeah, Magic.
Is Keyforge being played up here still?
Yeah, I get two players maybe once a month.
Oh wow, because Durban has like a big Keyforge following now.
Keyforge is not. It's great. Same guy who made Magic.
Yeah, Richard Garfield.
Yeah, it's a. It's a fun game, but it's not the same as Magic.
Oh, it's not. It's completely different game to Magic.
It's not as complex. It's not as intricate. It's not as competitive.
I think it can be as competitive, but I agree with you there. Like,
Magic is on its own level.
Is that what appeals to you about Magic?
Yeah, it's I always loved puzzles, and every single Magic game I play, it's different. It's a different puzzle.
Every single turn, every single card you draw, every single thing you do in Magic changes the
dynamic
equation, essentially, and you're always trying to solve problems.
Yeah. This is just like playing against Mono Red for the 500th time.
I think the Mono Red matchup does have some decision points.
Everybody's
for them. Not for you.
Mono Red is easy. No, if you're bad at maths, don't play Mono Red.
Yeah, literally. I mean, I'm not good at, like, I'm not a good mono red player. I'm not a bad aggro player.
Yeah.
But mono red is something different. Red green, I'm better with.
Yeah.
Like, I like
more mid range.
But mono red itself, it's, yeah, there's decision points that you have to make. And so that's the thing with Magic that, like, I love is that, is that every game is different. Every decision point means something. It's valuable, and like it changes the whole points of the game.
I mean,
stuff you do on turn two can affect you in turn seven.
Oh yeah. Look, I'm a big PC gamer, and the problem is, it's like I get bored with PC games. It's like buy the games, play the games, but it gets
it's not
boring.
Dynamic. It's the same thing
each
time you do it.
It's repetitive, and that's the thing with Magic. It's so intricate and it's so complex. It's the only card game approved by Mensa in the world.
Well,
there's a reason for that.
Well, they haven't been able to make an AI that can beat humans at it yet.
Yeah, they're
worried that they can't.
They can't. They won't be able to. The game is that complex.
Yeah, well, it's also, I mean, it's just because of the number of variables.
Yeah.
It's impossible
it's
to
too many, yeah, it's...
So for an AI to actually figure that out is quite difficult.
Yeah, but also, look, there is variance in the game, a little, like 15% variance in the game. So it's a bit of luck-based, but that makes the game exciting.
Well, also, the best players in the world only win 60% of their games.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy thing to think, but also they're playing against the best players in the world as well.
So
like, if they're playing against us,
60% win rate is fantastic.
It's incredible, and that sounds insane, because if you had to, look at any other sports, if you had a 60% win rate, you'd be slightly above average.
Yeah, above average.
But
yeah.
In Magic, if you've got like a 52% win rate,
that's good.
You're not in the negative.
You're
better than most of the people.
Exactly.
But you actually, so you said you were in IT.
It's started off in Petersburg. We worked for a few companies in IT. I moved to Joburg. Got into IT at a big FMCG company. Producing soft drinks. Was in IT there for about 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what made you decide to move on?
They went through a big merger.
So it wasn't necessarily your decision.
No. It was my decision. It's like they just gave me the job I didn't want.
So that was kind of the catalyst for the pushing more into Magic and making it more of a business than that.
I said it's now or never. It's like, if I don't do it now, I'll never do it in my life.
And how much has your IT background helped with this?
A lot. If you look at building a system or database to have your cards on and making sure your system's in place to support your business, it's very important. And I like to say, my systems at the moment is
your new system's really good.
Yeah, it's the best in the country.
The old system was a little average.
Yeah, it was average. It was horrible. I wasn't happy for ages. But the developers I used was recommended by friends.
Yeah.
And I learned my lesson. Never use local developers.
Really?
Yeah, never. Well,
I'm sure there are some good local developers, but
find them. The guys I'm using now, they're based in New Zealand. Fantastic company. Amazing work they did. And it's fantastic. You have to understand your systems need to run 100% to make money for you.
Especially in the online markets. I assume that makes more money for you than the store.
No, it doesn't.
Really?
No. The physical store does make me more money, but the overheads are more expensive in the store, but.
Do you find people coming into the store are more likely to spend more money than online? Because I'm trying to figure it out. Because to me, I would assume, but I'm actually looking at my own spending patterns here. Like online, I buy exactly what I want.
Yeah.
When I'm in a store, I'm like, let me add that.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happens.
I need some sleeves. But if I'm online, I'm going to go, I need these 8 cards.
Yeah, you need those 8 cards, and that's what I'm going to
order.
Yeah,
but even today, I'm in your store, and I'm like, that foil veil of summer.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
the store is, people spend a lot more. But yeah, the idea behind the store is to make a comfortable space for the players to enjoy it. And the more they enjoy it, the more time they're going to spend in the shop, the more money they're going to spend. And that's all my whole goal behind opening the store.
What, getting people to spend money there?
Yeah. Well, and enjoy it. You know, enjoy the game they play and just spend time there. It's an escape from your real life. It's you work hard every day, 8 hours, and you need to blow off some steam. And if you're not into drinking and partying, well, come to the shop, have fun.
I mean, but that is also something you kind of offer at the store.
Yeah, well, look, after hours...
You're one of the few stores that you can drink at.
Yeah, well, look, if it's after hours, there's no kids, minors in the shop, I tell the guys, like, there's a fridge, pop some beers in the fridge, have fun.
That's a really nice thing, like, even today, because today, like, I, you know, had a beer whilst playing a tournament.
Yeah.
Like, it's so... Because we are adults.
Yeah, right? We are adults. Like, and we spend a lot of money on a hobby.
Yeah, but even just that, like, it's not even for me, like, spending the money. It's like, I, you know, like, when I started playing Magic, one of my favorite things was the after the vibe, because I would go back to my friends' houses, and we'd drink, and we'd smoke, and we'd jab Magic until 4 a.m,
exactly.
You know? And,
yeah.
Like, and that's the cool thing that I get at your shop, is, like, I mean, I assume you could have, like, a lock-in party, even, and, like...
We can do that, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's so rad, and, like, no one else really does that. No one else really caters to...
Yeah, that's a problem. It's, most of the time, the shops cater for minors, new players, and...
Which isn't bad, obviously.
No, it's good for business, but... On a Saturday morning, I'll cater for the younger crowd.
Yeah, but on a Saturday night, you can...
Yeah, Saturday night and Friday nights, it's like, I want my experienced players in the shop. I want them to have fun. Come have a few beers. Just jam Magic. It's just come have fun.
That's dope. And then what do you think the future of this game is, and card gaming in general? Because Magic the Gathering's now got a new platform called MTG Arena. Before, we had MTGO, but that wasn't necessarily great for new
horrible.
Players.
Yeah, it was horrible.
I mean, I thought MTGO was fine as a Magic player, as someone who was enfranchised and knew how to do it. I still kind of prefer it to Arena in a lot
of
ways.
As a program in general, but it's horrible.
But I agree with you, like, there's a lot of things to it, like, that really fucking suck. But now Arena has added this whole new vibe to, like, Magic the Gathering. It's improved the game in a lot of ways. It's changed game design.
So Wizards is trying to compete with Hearthstone.
Yeah, but Hearthstone's not even that big anymore.
No, because it's fallen off.
Yeah.
Because there's only so much you can do in Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And now, with Magic on a similar platform, it's going to grow exponentially. And I've even seen in my store.
But doesn't that... So, I mean, I know you're catering to this as well. Like, you want people to play... Like, you're happy with people coming in with
their
laptops.
Like,
yeah,
can put your laptop, connect to the Wi-Fi, jam some Magic.
But does it not worry you then for the future of the game that it's going digital? Do you think... Like, do you not see a time where competitive Magic won't be in paper?
Since I've opened, I've got more players in the shop wanting to invest into the paper game
because of
Arena. They started playing Arena, they love Arena, and they want to start playing other formats, and they want to break into the card game.
Yeah, it's the other formats that I appreciate, but, like, for me, it's like, since I've started playing Arena, I'm like, I need to get rid of all my cards. Like,
yeah, because that's the biggest problem. It's money you're dumping in it, and time that you're investing.
Time for me, I don't really spend money on the Arena.
Yeah, but,
like,
and you're not going to see a return on investment.
Well, that's also the weirdest thing about Magic the Gathering as a hobby. What other hobby do you spend money on and potentially get some of it back?
Exactly. Like, that's Magic the Gathering for me in paper. It's you see your return on investment.
Which is so crazy. Like, it's mind-boggling that, like, there's this financial aspect to a game. Like, on Fortnite, you fucking buy your season's pass and you get, like, everything for the month. You can't sell your shit.
Who wants to spend money on cosmetics anyway? Oh, well.
I don't know if you've seen an MTG Arena. Like, I think the only thing is to spend money on cosmetics.
I mean, it just comes from the fact that there's a secondary market.
Yeah.
If Magic was to stick all the money back, it would be no way to make money.
No.
Because you can actually sell the cards.
But
that's the thing that they want to do with Arena, is they want to actually take away the secondary market as much as possible.
And that's a problem.
But to be honest, Arena is so much cheaper. By the way, for the people who don't know, that's Vaynant. But, like, it's so much cheaper. Like, it's infinitely cheaper, almost. I think I've spent about $40 total on MTG Arena. And like I was telling you today, I've got two full sets of like going into the next standard. I've got all the Guilds of Ravnica cards. I've got all the other fucking Ravnica cards.
Just for reference, how much do you think that would be like in actual, if you had to buy them in paper?
$800-$900
each set. Four
well,
of each.
Well, each set is about $500-$600.
Okay, so four cards of each.
Yeah.
So that's $2,000 of each set. So that's $4,000.
Yeah.
That I got for $440.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can't sell that.
Yeah, I can't sell that. But I also now have access to those cards all the time. If I want to build a deck, I don't have to go, oh no, I traded that card away because I needed this.
Only till October when it rotates out.
Yeah, for those. Yeah, but you face the same problem with paper magic.
No, but a clever speculator knows.
Hey, you know I know.
You trade those cards before they rotate and get your value.
Yeah, fuck man, this game is so, like, I feel like this is going to be a podcast for enfranchised Magic players already, but
no,
I'm
great,
hoping people who don't
trust that bridge.
Yeah, I'm hoping that people who've never played Magic before do get a fair understanding. But do you not see even in the future that digital overtaking, like,
once we release it on mobile, I think.
But do you think they will?
They have to.
Like, I agree, but I feel like that would fuck over paper.
Look, they already said it's going to be on.
No, they said they were going to make a different
no,
game for
it's,
mobile.
It's going to. Which platform it's going to be
Mac.
Now? No, but the store. The same as Fortnite.
Oh, Epic.
Yeah, Epic Games. So they're releasing it on an Epic store. So it's already telling me, okay, they're going to cater for different platforms. It means PS4, Xbox is going
to
have.
See, that's fine, but I think. They did say that they wanted to make a different game for the phone, and I think it's because...
I think you're going to have the same game.
I think it would be very difficult
no,
to...
you have to...
Okay, how do you... Dude, imagine... Okay.
No, it's going to be difficult to program, but
yeah.
Once you get it right... I mean,
not just
Hearthstone
that,
did it. Hearthstone did it.
No, but Hearthstone don't have 700 tokens. Like, Hearthstone have a limit.
Yeah.
You can only have 7 things on the table. Like, you can't skate, like...
Yeah, but putting a
skate shift.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Putting a little symbol with X times 20 on a token is not difficult.
Is it a 20th powered token, or is it...
No, a little tutu to X times 20. It's going to be fun. They're gonna make it work for mobile. It's going to grow the game. And
I think, but that's the thing. I think mobile would probably kill paper a lot more, because if I can just bring my phone to a store...
Yeah.
And
the thing that Magic the Gathering makes
it's the
special,
gathering.
Yeah, it's the social aspect of the game.
But you
it's,
can play the social aspect of the game with a computer. I bring my laptop, you bring your laptop, and we chill across the room from each
that's
other.
That's not fun.
Yeah.
Why is that not fun?
No, that's not. It's not the same, dude.
No, I don't have to shuffle. I don't have to remember triggers. I don't have to check. I don't have to worry about my opponent cheating.
That's where it.
As a competitive player.
That's where it makes it fun.
Yeah.
Just all those things. It's like making sure your opponent doesn't cheat you by shuffling or missing triggers. That's taking the game to the next level. And getting automated by a program, that's not fun. It's not
fun. No, I disagree with you. I think it takes away the unnecessary parts of the game. The remembering fucking shit that, like, should just happen. Like, I play the spell, it happens. Like, I shouldn't have to remember that when I play this spell, this card does that.
Oh, no.
The game should know that.
That's the thing that makes it so great. It's so complex. It rewards you for being good.
But I want... No, see, that rewards you for memory. It doesn't reward you for...
Does it? Is it memory? No.
Yes, remembering a trigger. It's not like the strategic gameplay of the game, like, isn't necessarily improved by having
to
remember every trigger.
When you play a high-level competitive event at a Grand Prix... It's like you are programmed. This, I mean, I played my first Grand Prix last year.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about this. You went overseas, you've played some Magic the Gathering, even in the time after the game, I was playing Tickets
yeah,
to the Ship.
So my biggest dream.
You paid for it yourself
yeah,
and you went to
yeah,
Barcelona.
My biggest dream was to play overseas. And last year, it's actually on my birthday last year, I won a. How do we call it? What was it? RPTQ? No, it wasn't a
PPTQ.
PPTQ. So I won a PPTQ, and it was the special 25th anniversary one, and you could take a team worth to anywhere to play the Pro Tour qualifier.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yes, this was a team one. Yeah.
So there was a Pro Tour qualifier in Utrecht in the Netherlands, and I took two mates with, but we were a group of 12 South Africans that went to Utrecht. And we played there, and the week after was Grand Prix Barcelona, which was modern format, which you don't get on Arena.
No.
And yeah, it was my first overseas experience, and I really had a fantastic result, and I was happy. So
how do you balance the competition versus businessman side of the things?
Oh, like, the advantage of going overseas is, like, a lot of my singles I took with to Barcelona, and I couldn't move him locally, and I came back with extra money. It paid for my trip. It was like, in general, worthwhile. I came back with about 250,000 rand. just dumped it into the business again, and yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not quite what I was asking, but it's good to know.
Yeah.
I just meant, like, so as a Magic player, like, you know, like, competitive Magic players typically focus on the competitive. You don't have many people who are competitive and own a store.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got Luis Scott Vargas with Channel Fireball,
yeah,
which is unreal. And you got, like, Cedric, who kind of runs Star City Games.
Star City Games stuff, yeah.
But it's rare, like, in South Africa for store owners to be good at Magic or even have a competitive.
There's no store owner in South Africa that's good at Magic.
Yeah.
Well, I try to be good at Magic anyway, but yeah.
I mean, you're pretty good.
Yeah, I rate myself one of the better players in the country, so.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, does owning a store and having to run all those things and, like, you know, even, like, today, like, you know, you're playing in the tournament, but you've got to get up and, like,
yeah,
you know,
that's
help
fine.
People.
How do you think I make profit? I win my own events. No, I'm
not when I'm there.
No, well, look, it's tough, but, yeah, it's...
obviously, you focus more on the business. It's, like, you're not that ego-driven,
no,
are you?
No, not at all.
You're slightly ego-driven. Aren't we all?
No, it's fine. It's like, but the thing is, in Magic, it's such a niche thing. It's like, when you're one of the better players in your country, you like to brag about it.
Yeah.
It's like,
although, like, it's so funny. Like, for me, like, in Arena, I made, like, top 250.
Yeah.
In the world, and posted on Twitter. No one cared.
Nobody cared. Yeah,
it's like
Arena.
Like, everyone else. No, I mean, people in South Africa, like, people who play Magic cared. Mm. Like, you know, everyone was like, yeah, well done, like, in the Magic community. But anyone outside was just like,
well, look,
who cares? I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, one of the best in the world at a thing. Like, it doesn't matter what that thing is, you're not one of the best in the world. Like,
if we lived in the States and you did that, people would go nuts. It's such a popular game in the States, and I mean, it's been running for 26 years now, and the game is just, it's had its up and downs, and it's just been growing.
Yeah, I've lived through some times.
Yeah,
I mean, I quit Magic for a while. Did you quit Magic at all?
Four times.
Why?
Four times. So, first time I quit it was when I was 17 years old. My folks had a problem with me playing a game summoning demons and whatever, so I decided to sell. I sold my cards for drinking money, because that's way better.
I did that in my 20s, and, like, I've regretted it literally forever.
So,
like, I sold fucking cards that, like, are on the reserve. Like, Guy's Cradles for, like, probably, like, 50 rand?
Oh, yeah, maybe 4,500 rand.
Yeah.
But understand, it's like, those cards I sold for 10 grand when I was 17 years old.
A lot of money, you feel good, dude.
When you're 17 and you sell a card for 10 grand and you're 17, you're going on holiday, you're going to have a good time. It's fantastic. But I'm 33 now, and those cards would have been about 450,000 rand.
Yeah, no, I've looked at my old stuff and gone, yeah, I threw away probably about 100k.
Oh, dude, I used to use Wastelands as proxies.
So for those of you who don't know, Wastelands at the moment are what, like $30,
$40? $45, so yeah. It's like a 600 rand card.
Yeah, I've got a Oblivion Stone that's got your mother written on it.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
It's got very sentimental value. Yeah. Like,
oh, dude, the saddest thing I've ever done is, like, selling my complete foil set of 7th edition Birds of Paradise. Yeah. And they're about $800 a piece now.
Yeah, that's gonna make you sad.
Yeah, and that just, oh, man.
But, like, fuck, so, for us, this all is a very regular conversation and, like, really normal. And, like, I mean, personally, as a poor person, it's been, like, weird playing Magic, but being good at Magic has been helpful for me. Like, I win a lot, and, like, I've never really spent a lot of money.
You don't have to spend money on this game.
If you're good at it.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's, but don't take out money and buy a sealed product. Buy a deck, get good at the game, start playing, get better.
I was going to ask, what's your advice to people? So this is kind of it.
So, go read up. Try the game, see if you like it. If you like the game, build a deck, master the deck. Start winning with the deck. Start getting your return on investment with prizes. Start trading for better stuff. Start trading into eternal formats like Legacy and Modern or Pauper or Commander. Whatever, just straight up in value. And that's how you go. Your hobby will pay for itself.
If you're good.
If you're good.
Yeah.
There are lots of people who play Magic the Gathering who lose money.
But if you're not good and you have money, just speculate.
But that's also the thing. Like, I guess that's lucky for people like me, is that there are people in the game who aren't good at it, but spend money on it.
Hmm.
And so...
There has to be a balance.
They're essentially subsidizing my play.
Yeah,
it's like, a very zero-sum way to look at it, because as someone, like, I don't care about what I win in Magic.
Yeah, you
don't.
It's
just pieces of cardboard, and it's not like I don't win, I do well.
Yeah, you do very well, dude, especially in Durban. You were the one person that, like, I hated fucking sitting against.
What, but is Vayner good at Magic?
Yes.
But it doesn't... But there's no, like, I don't
When he's
need,
not too stressed out.
I don't need the money. So,
yeah.
Like, saying that people are putting money in, but they're not getting it back, that's just... It's not that zero sum where people feel that they are being cheated out of it because they're not making money.
Exactly, because the thing is, with it, it's a hobby.
Yeah.
So for them, they're just spending money on a hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but that's what I'm saying. For me, like, as a poorer person, like, it's been this great thing. It's been this weird-ass thing. Like, in terms of my life, in terms of that thing, I've interacted with people in a class range that... Like, people who have money that I can't imagine, like, essentially. Like, coming from Umbilo, like, and then you're playing against people whose decks
yeah.
are worth more yeah. than everything you own. Like, literally, like, my entire, like, value as a human being with money isn't even worth, like, a Legacy deck.
Like, yeah, I had the same thing. It's like, I had a deck worth about 200,000 rand, and I played with it. And it's like, you can't.
I'm getting to that point now where I'm like, fuck it, I just need to sell any card that gets to $100, I sell. Like, just because... Yeah.
Because you picked it up for $10 back in the day, now it's $100. You made 10 times your investment.
Exactly. Like,
so it's a logical thing to do.
But at the same time, I mean, like, you know the card's still going to go up over time, probably. And you don't get to play with it anymore after you sell it, after you trade it.
Yeah, it's like investing in Bitcoin. It's like you never know what's going to happen.
I'm so grateful for like, that shit because, like, everyone, like, last year, everyone was like, oh, Bitcoin's going down.
Hey, Bitcoin.
And now I'm just like, ah!
Hey, Bitcoin helped me open my store.
I can imagine.
That's all that I'm saying.
My Bitcoin experience was selling Magic cards for Bitcoin and it going up. And I was like, ah, yes, I made like $3,000
exactly.
or something that
but,
cost me.
That's a typical Magic player thing, but you do everything for value.
Yeah,
it's,
and that's why I was saying. So you and I think very value based.
Yeah,
Vaynant, just a rich puss. So
he just wants to have fun. He just wants to have fun.
I just want
to
win. Like, yeah. It's not about.
But
like,
you don't care about the prizes you get when you win
at all. Like,
oh, you see, to me, like
yeah, you're not gonna do it. It's paying to win. It's
oh, you see, to me, like the thing is, like I'm used to winning. So it's like not like I know that sounds arrogant, but like. Winning is like a fairly regular thing when I play Magic. It's not like all the time. I'm not acting like... I mean, today I lost. Like, you know, it was 2-1-1. And like... I mean, you've beaten me plenty. And like lots of people... Like, you can't... Like we were saying, like a good player... Like a great player wins 60% of the time.
Yeah.
So even me, like I can act like, you know, I win more than I do. But I don't always. But at the end of the day, like for me, it is about that prize at the end.
Yeah.
Personally, I'm not that attached to beating people because it depends on the person.
But that's where you and I differ. It's I don't care about the prizes as well. I care about winning.
Yeah.
And
see, I just like to me like winning is assumed, and I know that's fucked up. Like, I know that's fucked up, but I do think I'm going to win.
You're
every
really
game on
not that play. Great at this game. I hope you know that.
I do assume.
Yeah,
I know, but the thing is, in my mind, I assume I'm going to win every game of Magic I play.
Sorry about that.
Like, that's totally fine. Like, because, and I think that is why I've got a fairly decent win rate, is because I do, like, I do just go into games with that confidence and with that mindset of how do I win this game. It's never like, oh, I hope this guy doesn't beat me, because
yeah.
I'm not stressed about that. Like, because I don't care about losing. Like, if I lose, it's fine. Like, it's... like, it's not a big dent to my ego. Like, I'm not, like, stressed about it.
It's just, like, there's various things people get out of winning as well. Like, you know, there's the four archetypes that are not in Magic, you know, the Jimmy, the Tony, and the Spike.
Yeah.
Trying to get different things out. But there's also subcategories, like, people...
Within the Spike category, yeah, which we would all be considered Spikes.
No, most definitely, but it's just because, like, you look at the rainbow, or the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah.
Winning is a means to an end.
Yeah.
But for myself...
But it depends on who I'm playing. Like, if I'm playing against you...
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to fucking beat you. Like, yeah, I feel good when I beat you. Like, definitely. Like, for you, it's the rainbow. For me, it's the pot of gold at the end.
Yeah.
But it's also, it depends on the players. Who, like, are there any players in South Africa at the moment that you sit down against and you go, oh, fuck?
Yeah, definitely a handful. I mean, the Ward brothers stands out.
Really?
Yeah, Wesley and Jason Ward. Fantastic players. Definitely Enrico.
Wesley's good. I haven't played Jason that much.
Oh, Jason is a fantastic player. He actually, I mean, Wesley has been playing for about 2 years.
Okay.
And his brother taught him, and amazing. And I mean, I took Wesley with to Utrecht on my team. Okay. And
yeah, I haven't played against either of them that much.
It's the thing is, we have fantastic Magic talent in this country. And I mean, I've played against a world champion, and to be honest, we've got game.
Yeah.
We've got game. We don't get the exposure like the pros do. But I can put money on South African players. If I can put a team of 8 players together and take them with to overseas, we can take on the best in the world.
But
easily.
Do you think the lack of tournament experience,
yes,
big tournament experience hits us?
Biggest thing.
Because the problem that we have, because I agree with you, lots of great Magic players in South Africa. There's, I mean, a few that, like, I do go like, oh, fuck. But very few. But those guys are all playing overseas.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are all doing that thing. But the thing is, for a lot of people, when they're in South Africa, when they go play overseas in their first big GP or in their first pro tour, they fuck out.
Well, look, dude, I played...
You did well. I know you did well.
I went undefeated day one. No South African has ever went undefeated day one at a Grand Prix.
Yeah, but that's fucked up because South Africans have played in lots of Grand Prix over the years. So,
no, they have. World Championships, World Magic Championships... pro tours.
But even if you look at the World Magic Cup, we always get fucked. We like, and we got good players.
No, the problem is team dynamics. The problem is the World Magic Championship was a team-based event, and there was always imbalance in the team.
Okay.
So the problem is you get a captain and you get the two teammates, and there was always an imbalance. I always try to help the guys when we go overseas, and it's like, there's always been complaints when we get back. It's like, no, they wanted to play this instead of that. And it's like, you know, there's imbalance. But when you go, Magic is a 1v1 game.
Yeah.
And when you go on a solo game, there's nobody else to blame except yourself.
Yeah.
So
that's also what I love about Magic. It's like,
yeah,
if I lose,
it's your own fault.
Sometimes.
All the 15% variance
it's the fucking having to mulligan 7 times.
That's the variance in the game. You can experience that 15% variance that you should have experienced over a week in one day.
But it is also, the thing is, yeah, I do feel that is what I love about Magic, is the responsibility is all on you.
Yeah, it's balanced. It's
like,
completely balanced.
I didn't lose because that guy couldn't pass the fucking ball. I didn't lose because, like, in League of Legends or Dota, like, someone got
you
fucking
kept a
ganked,
bad hand,
like,
or you made a bad play, or
you just played the wrong card on turn 2.
Exactly.
Yeah. You played an Augur or Bolas instead
of
playing,
your lines were incorrect.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. It's like, I mean, I went to a team event last year in Utrecht, and it's like, people tell me, it's like, oh, you made the wrong play. I went 7-0 in Utrecht. And it was a team event. We needed one win as a team to make top 8. And it's like, people judge me afterwards, and it's like, oh, no, you made the wrong play. And it's like, guys, I won.
Kind of won, so.
But just to focus on what Bob was saying about, sorry, for, like,
please,
about the tournament aspect of it, because I honestly think this is also the biggest issue if you have. Because every time I've been at nationals as well, the person you're sitting across from, most of them have been at, like, 1-2 national stops. Everyone has got the jitters about them.
No, there's a lot of inexperience.
It's hilarious,
a lot of inexperience.
Dude.
You see
people literally shaking.
And it's the same game,
dude,
that you've been playing.
Dude, I've been playing this game for 20 years, and I still shake when I go to a big event.
But that's because we have so few of them.
No,
yeah. That's
no,
the
dude.
Thing is, if we had more exposure in terms of tournaments, when we actually went to these big events,
oh yeah,
dude,
like,
dude,
much
I went 8-0 at Barcelona. Barcelona and I played Nationals 2 months afterwards and I still shake.
Yeah, also, by the way, fuck you, because if I hadn't changed my deck to your list, I think I would have done better.
Oh, whatever. Whatever. That list took me 7-0 in retreat.
Yeah, and guess what? Different metagame.
Well, you can't... Yeah, again, so one of those variants of a day you can't predict. It's a problem.
You know what? I think we've gotten quite a lot out of this conversation.
Oh, hell yeah.
I think it's going to be interesting for people to listen to if they've never played Magic before. I don't know how much of it they're going to get.
Guys, just go Google YouTube, Magic for Gathering, have fun.
I mean, the thing is, I think a lot of people who listen to... Because I talk about Magic a lot
in general.
Like, I love the game. I do. I get frustrated by the... A lot. I mean, to be completely honest, I kind of hate the finance side of it because I wish it was cheap as fuck and everyone could play it. Yeah. But... Because I do. Personally, I am one of those people who's like... If every card could just be £1, that'd be amazing. You know, yeah, like, because we would be playing with thousands of people.
No,
like,
yeah. No, the reserve list is also bullshit, by the way.
Yeah, of course it is. But as someone who's been buying up reserve list cards over the last, 5 years, the reserve list is great because the return on investment is higher than any fucking interest rates I can find.
I mean, I wish I could show people my sealed collection at home. Yeah, use the boxes back from Urza's Legacy and stuff.
It's an important point that you touch on because, I mean, people have this idea that they want to make money out of Magic, but that's not like how I feel it should be. I would also love it if Magic was free, if like every piece of cardboard was the same as another piece of cardboard.
Yeah.
It's like frustrating because even myself, I didn't mind spending money on the game.
But you do feel like it's a waste sometimes,
like,
I'm sure.
You get to points where you look at the commitment that you have to make and it's like, listen, if I want to take my deck from where it is to where it should be, that's 3,000.
So actually, that's a good question. How do you guys feel about the pay to win aspect of Magic? Do you think it is pay to win?
No.
No.
I agree, but
let's hear it.
So for me, it's like, you can seriously invest in the best deck in the metagame and you can pay $750 for a standard deck.
If you're a cuck player, you're fucked.
Yeah, if you shit at the game, you're going to fucking lose.
But it's someone... So you're from the era of Blue Green Madness.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Which was a deck that was...
It was cheap.
It was cheap as fuck. It was probably about $500.
And you could mess good players around with small interactions.
Playing against guys who were playing Sagatog, which was like a 2,000 grand deck at the time.
Exactly. Sagatog was super expensive. I mean, I played Dog as well as a deck after that Nationals, and it was a great deck. But it's not about pay to win. It's about... learning your deck and learning how to face your different matchups.
But there still is that economic barrier to the game.
So, I mean, if we look at, like, we had Mono Blue, and it was really good.
Oh, yeah, it was cheap. $80. $80.
To be completely honest with you, I made my money back on that deck.
Yeah, it won a Pro Tour.
And Mono Red as well.
Yeah.
So we have two examples in the same standard where you have the ability to pay.
But still, $80 is like $1,200. Like, it's for...
See, that just shows how warped our sense of what money is.
Okay, buy a box of boosters, $2,400.
Oh, yeah,
I could pay half of that money and buy a tier 1 competitive deck and make my money back in a month's time.
It's just
winning,
like,
prizes.
For some people thinking about it, but at the same time, motherfuckers spend like a grand on a fucking PC game. So if you can buy a deck that you're going to play for like months and you can sell those cards and you get more. Because for me, like, the mono blue deck, the only cards I really needed when I played here was the Terramanas and stuff.
You fucking came up won the tournament in my shop.
Won two tournaments in a row.
Yeah.
And then went back to Durban. Like, I won
so many boosters off
of that deck. And so for me, the $800, it wasn't even $800. I probably spent about $300 to complete the deck. And then from there, I probably won over 20 boosters.
But yet again, when formats that are non-rotating, like Pauper, Modern...
Where you can actually invest and your cards gain in value over
time. It's
going to
gain value and it's like you're not going to lose money at the end of the day, and it's just as fun. I mean, we played Pauper today.
Yeah.
And the most expensive deck was $90.
So for those of you who don't know, Pauper is a format made with the cheapest cards of Magic, essentially.
Yeah.
Like,
commons.
No one will know what commons are. So essentially the cheapest cards of Magic, but it's still super competitive and it's still... And that's why, like,
it's
agree with you.
It's intricate.
Magic doesn't have to be pay to win.
No.
Because when I started playing Magic Online again, I played a lot of Pauper.
Yeah.
And my first deck was $10.
Exactly.
And from there, I built up a collection that was $140, sold out of that collection, and got into Arena.
So you made your money back out.
I made a lot of money.
So I understand, it's not a pay to win. The thing is, it's like you can invest as little as $10 and make $140. It's
Yeah, but once again, I mean, I have invested the time. I have invested money in that. So, like, I do think
you invest the time in this game.
I do know that I've got more money out of Magic than I've put in. And,
yeah,
like, that's
of course
unheard of and really dope.
Well, most good players do.
Yeah, but it's not just the play.
Not in Africa. Hey.
Yeah, it's not just the play. You know the financial aspect of the game as well, and I do as well. So that's how I make sure that, like, I'm always okay. Like, it's the rotating of cards. It's the same thing that
that's just the standard format, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But that's the most popular format. And,
because
Wizard,
it's the most dynamic.
Yeah, the thing is, Wizards, they push standard the most because it's the most money they're going to make.
Of course, but also as a player, standard's important because it's always different.
Yeah.
So as a format that challenges you constantly, it's great. Sometimes the challenge is a bit less.
To be honest, I would rather spend money on 5 different pauper decks and have fun than spending money on 2 standard decks. It's
because the thing is, you know, the standard decks are going to lose value.
Yeah, no, of course.
But, I mean, Wizards also gives the most price support and functions for
standard.
Like, it's fine that Magic is standard.
But they realized as well, Modern is the most popular format for the players.
Yeah, that's why they've given Commander is, but that's why they've...
Yeah, Mythic Championship. I mean, how much money did they pay out now to the winner? $250,000 for the winner for the Modern Mythic Championship. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Casual amounts of money. Well, cool, gents. I mean, Venance, thanks for participating as well. And thank you so much for your time, Jacques.
Oh,
if people want to find you, people want to chat to you, people want to do whatever, what's your next... Twitter account, website, and then tell people about Comic-Con and everything else.
General, it's just hqgaming.co.za. Also, Facebook, HQ Gaming South Africa. Same for Twitter and Instagram.
Actually, what other games do you have other than Magic? Because not everyone who's listening to this is going to be a Magic player.
Well, we do a lot of board games. We've got mostly board games, D&D.
Oh, you had that weird-ass game that I've never seen before.
We've got crabs.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, what a fun board game. It's the same guys who made Exploding Kittens.
Oh, shit. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and it's not a lot of shops that have a game.
You've got crabs before.
It's fantastic. So much fun. Guys, go check the YouTube out. You've got crabs. Fun game. It's on available on my site.
How often do you guys do board games nights and stuff like that?
We do every week, Tuesday night at... it's at Woodstock Urban Pizzeria. Every Tuesday, we play board games every Tuesday. It's great fun.
People can just come join if they want.
Yeah, it's like if you play board games and order a pizza, you get a free drink, beer, wine, whatever. It's like we just have fun. It's every Tuesday night. We want to have fun.
Cool. Well, there you go. Thank you so much for your time, and I guess I'm going to see you at Comic-Con.
Yeah, cool, bud.
I'm going to try to win some $3,000.